Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 395.
This week on the podcast, so the giant corporation wins again in Bessemer. It doesn't have to always be this way.
And a predictable outcome, the Matt Gaetz story.
Plus, Mar-a-Lago's activities coordinator inexplicably has opinions on the world's evilest man.
And Andrew Cuomo is now a man without an enforcer or a clue, and it's going awesomely.
Plus, John Boehner is back and just as drunk as ever.
And Caitlyn Jenner is not a progressive icon, but she is a Republican trash bag, and she cannot be the governor of California.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
So, the Bessemer vote failed pretty hard. I'm not going to sugarcoat that for you.
No, but we are going to sugarcoat it for you.
But we're going to sugarcoat it for you in another way.
In another way. Right. But we're not here to tell you any lies about what happened, though.
No. And look, we sort of knew this was a possibility because Amazon was following the sort of Walmart playbook of union busting. The organizers are saying that there was some pretty egregious action on the part of Amazon during the vote
That's what they do. Right. That's probably going to go to court, as it should. I mean,
exactly. And also, only like just over a third of the eligible employees voted anyway. So it had a real American elections flavor to it in that nobody actually voted in it. But, you know, people.
Well, but that's one of the fear tactics. That they do is they try and drive down the vote because they basically create this fear that if you are somehow involved in this unionization effort, then you are going to lose your job, which they can't actually fire people for trying to unionize. Right. Like there are laws about that, but that is something that they, you know, cause or that they can create fear over. And so that's why you see only, you know, 1500 people voting out of 6000 eligible employees.
Yeah.
So
and they were
that
doing
in
all
and
the,
of itself is proof that they were doing shady things right there.
They were doing the usual stuff.
Vote.
They had them go to anti-union meetings that were pretend work meetings. They bombarded them with messages via text and, you know, posters and all sorts of things. I think we learned a couple weeks ago when we were first talking about the Bessemer vote that a majority of firms that go through union votes actually break the law and engage in illegal behavior. And
Wild.
In a majority of those scenarios, they choose to do it because paying the fines for breaking those laws is cheaper than paying their workers fair wages. And that, I think, is maybe the crux of the American problem. Because, again, a reminder that the Amazon workforces in other countries are unionized. Amazon is still making money in those countries. Jeff Bezos is still the richest man on the planet.
On Earth.
So,
right.
I mean, like, there is not a world in which it is not a profitable company because they are forced to pay their workers fair wages and give them bathroom breaks. That is not a realistic thing. Unfortunately, so the final count, there are about 500 ballots that they're going to challenge, but it's not enough to change the final count. There were almost 1,800 opposed and only about just over 700 for. So the organizers there have a lot of ground to make up. However, the sugarcoating part is that this inspired multiple unionization efforts in, you know, all over the country. Thousands of people inquired with the union that they were trying to unionize with about the possibility of unionizing themselves, including other workers at big box stores and warehouse workers and things like that. And also, I think just the sort of David versus Goliath story is sort of its own mythology, and it is still a pretty inspiring story. Taking on Amazon is like not small potatoes.
Totally.
It's not taking on some bullshit company that doesn't have much of a leg to stand on themselves, or a company like, you know, like maybe a GM that's about to go bankrupt. Taking on a company that's, you know, that's about to fall apart is not the same thing as taking on Amazon. So I think just the fact that this happened, that it got to the point where they actually got to have the vote, is like a pretty positive sign for the labor movement. I think you're going to read a lot of articles that are like, this is the death knell of the labor movement and tragedy ensued and blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, this is too bad for sure.
Right.
But the idea of a movement is that you have, you know, wins and losses. And the labor movement has been having wins and losses, and it is a David versus Goliath struggle to unionize against the most powerful company, in the most powerful company in the world. And so I think that it's just like a sign that you can try, which is not a bad thing, and is not it's not something we've really been able to see any examples of recently. You know, I think that's the union movement sort of in part fell apart because it became invisible. You just assume that unions are disappearing. You don't assume that you could join one or, you know, get involved
in
this,
And this, I think, is also sort of like how you continue over time to sort of like actually have structural change, right? Because also the types, the, you know, obviously, you know, unionization focuses on, you know, being paid properly and also, you know, working conditions and various other things, having healthcare, you know, but also it creates the types of, you know, unions are sort of, you know, at their core, they are just sort of, they're groups of working people, right? You know, I mean, like, so the more, you know, and they're going to be multicultural, they're going to be men and women, they're going to be, you know, I mean, like, this is really sort of like how you start to put together the type of change sort of as we move forward, like when you continue to push this, even if there are failures along the way.
Totally. Unionizing your workplace unionizes all of us. it helps all of us in part just because it helps build a labor movement that can be a political force even when your individual union is not powerful.
Right.
And, you know, that's something that I think creates a layer of democracy in a very undemocratic economic system. You know, capitalism is not the most I think economists like to frame it like it is because it's like purchasing power. The demand is, you know, drives the economy or whatever. But that's not actually the kind of system that we live in. We live in a system where the government makes decisions about which industries to subsidize. And those decisions are not often based on needs or demand because you would, you know, if they were based on demand, then we would have a lot of subsidized, you know, a lot of subsidized living conditions that we don't currently have accessible to many people. We would have subsidized healthy foods, which instead we just have subsidized corporate foods that, you know, make you sick. And, you know, there would be a lot of things that would be subsidized if the government was making their decisions about how to best support the economy on the basis of actual demand. They're not. So this helps create a more democratic economic system in general because it gives working people the power to ask for things with the amount of leverage that they need to actually get those things.
100%. And that right there, what you just said, is the crux of why Republicans hate them, right?
I mean,
like, because these are not, Amazon workers are not the group of people that Republicans want to have power.
That's right.
Right? Some Democrats don't want them to have power either. That's a separate story that we're sort of going to get into. Later, a little bit, or I intend to get into later in a different story. Keep going. You have to.
Yeah.
There's nothing else to do.
And also, it's so much better to be in a union than to not be. Speaking as a millennial who freelances, who has never been able to be in a union, which is my highest aspiration, like, there are just things that you don't have to do alone if you're in a union. You don't have to demand, you know, you don't have to demand your raise alone in a union. You don't have to demand that your, you know, health insurance not get pulled out from under you or that it not get changed suddenly. I mean, Brent and I have both been in work situations where we had fairly steady work, but our health plans changed out from under us. And there was really no organizational force that helped the employees address the fact that they had lost essentially a kind of compensation. And that's something that having a union is, you know, helps you deal with. I mean, then you have to figure out how to make your union effective. There are a lot of ineffective unions too, but that's, you can't do that if you don't have a union.
Right. Exactly.
You can't take over your union if you don't have one.
Right. A non-existent union is also an ineffective union.
Correct. It's the most ineffective kind of union.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
In any case, moving on. This Matt Gaetz story is the gift that keeps on giving, but also the most predictable outcome for a man. And it's so often that you have someone like Matt Gaetz, who you know is just like a fucking sleazebag, who doesn't get what's coming to them, and you have to watch them just sort of whittle away the way that, like, Mitch McConnell is just sort of, like, withering into the distance with his gross hands and his Band-Aids and his wife. Like, I just feel like you so rarely get the justice that you want to see with someone who's as annoying as Matt Gaetz.
Right. Well, the thing is, like, And the thing that I think is the least shocking thing about this is that it's one of his so-called friends who is turning on him. Because that, I feel like, is sort of like a real sort of overarching story of a lot of these scandals that we have seen, whether it's Trump or whoever these it is.
Well, you know, it's like, the Trump way.
Right, exactly. If it wasn't this specific scandal, something would have got Matt Gaetz because he's a sleazebag. But as a sleazebag, he has been traveling in circles with other sleazebags. And that is what ends up getting you.
That's right. Well, think about Michael Cohen is a sleazebag, a personal sleazebag. He was engaged taxi medallion bullshit. Yep. He was a fixer for Trump. But you know what took him down was a loyal compatriot turning on him, because that is what Trump world is all about. And Matt Gaetz is in Trump world, essentially.
In Trump world. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Michael Cohen is the Matt Gaetz of 2 years ago.
Right. Exactly. But anyway, just for some background, because we talked about the scandal last week, but it was sort of like just really getting going. And we got some updates this week. And I don't really know that we dove into fully what it was, other than that Matt Gaetz is a disgusting person who was being charged with, you know.
Human trafficking, and that he was trying to drag Tucker Carlson into the ring with him. And Tucker Carlson, for once, exercised good judgment and was like, no, sir.
Right. But the way he got into all of this was through this friend of his named Joel Greenberg. And Greenberg, I think, used to be like the city tax collector at some town that's in like Matt Gaetz's district or something like that. So they became like friendly or whatever.
That feels right.
Right, exactly. So the Justice Department had been investigating Greenberg, and they are now, and he got charged with a bunch of stuff. And it was actually through the Greenberg investigation that the whole Gaetz scandal has come from. So the federal investigators, and also this is what I think proves the point that this obviously started in the Bill Barr era, because like this is all not new within the last 2.5 months, because Greenberg got charged last year.
Yeah.
So this is not a Joe Biden going after Matt Gaetz situation here, people. But anyway, this Greenberg guy got charged with what did he get charged with?
Oh, stalking, identity theft, wire fraud, illegally obtaining personal information, sex trafficking a minor. I mean, he's done it all.
Right. Like this all adds up to like potentially like life in prison. And when he initially got charged with this, he entered a plea of not guilty. Well, this week they had some hearings on his case, on Greenberg's case, and the federal prosecutors now think that they are going to be getting a plea deal out of Greenberg. And the reason that Greenberg would be maybe going for a plea deal was if he was going to spill the beans to get his sentence reduced on maybe some bigger targets, one of them being Matt Gaetz.
Yeah. And some of the things that they're investigating, they're looking into whether Gaetz and Greenberg shared sexual partners and paid them with money, hotels, travel, and drugs in exchange for sex, including a 17-year-old. That's why they're sex trafficking a minor is one of the charges. Yeah. But I mean, like, they're talking about Gaetz meeting a lot of the most objectionable charges that Greenberg is being charged with, because they were essentially engaging in similar behavior. So Greenberg has some additional charges, things like wire fraud and stuff like that, that were just like schemes he was running as a just like general purpose ridiculous person. But a lot of the other charges are ones that I think Gaetz could be in danger of receiving.
Oh, for sure. And I was watching the news this week, and they were talking to somebody about these specific charges. And for good reason, the rules of like what will cause you to be guilty of sex trafficking of a minor are very broad and very vague. Yeah. Like they do not have to prove that Matt Gaetz had sex with this person. They do not have to prove much other than like, even if all Matt Gaetz did was solicit this person in like an essentially like a joking fashion, like if he knew that she was 17 and they were trying to get her to like go have sex with him. I mean, like, if this is even close to true, he's going to jail, and the sentences for sex trafficking or doing anything with a minor are like, he could very well be in jail for a minute.
Also, I feel like we do know for sure that most of the charges are true because he's bragged about them to various people. Right. So there are witnesses. Yeah. All of his colleagues right. Are going right. to be able to be like, yeah, no, he told me about that.
Right. We know he was with the 17-year-old because he told us on Hannity.
Right. He said it on national television. Yeah. Right. And tried to drag Tucker Carlson into the ring with him, who was not trying to be involved. I don't think that we have to worry that they aren't going to be able to find the proof that Matt Gaetz was engaging in illegal acts because he's told everyone about it.
Right. And also, and Greenberg's lawyer after this hearing on Thursday had like a little press conference outside the courtroom. And he said, and I quote, "I am sure Matt Gaetz is not feeling very comfortable today."
It's too amazing.
Ooh, it's going to happen.
You guys, don't get into bed with these people. They are not good friends. No. You know,
But when Matt Gaetz is himself inherently a just disgusting person, there's no way for him to know, there's no moral compass that would lead him to be like, oh, I should not be friends with this Greenberg character. Because, like,
he's not a good read on character, probably. No. He probably can't tell that these people are untrustworthy because he doesn't understand what makes someone trustworthy because he wouldn't know how to do it himself.
That's it.
It's left him with a little, it's like, but like, you know, when you're like in camp or whatever and everyone is like, you know, promising to be the best friends that they'll ever be forever. And, you know, you say that you would like cover up a murder for somebody or whatever people say when they're trying to pretend that they're going to be best friends forever. If you meet someone like Matt Gaetz and they tell you that they will definitely cover up a murder for you because they're engaged in the kind of crimes where you would need a friend who had promised to cover up a murder for you,
right.
I would just like contend that you really want to feel like you can trust your judge of character or your judgment about their character in a way that I don't think Matt Gaetz was primed to. If someone is offering to commit illegal acts with you, you want them to be the kind of friend who actually would cover up a murder for you. Not the kind of friend who will definitely turn on you to get a plea deal no matter what happens.
Yeah.
This is an ongoing issue in many of the Orange is the New Black storylines. So he could have learned this from television easily.
Yeah.
This is something even I know as a person who has not been to prison or engaged in any high crimes. So it just seems like maybe he's not smart enough to be a Congress member anyway.
No, I think you're right. I did learn this week that he had a 19-year-old son, which was news to me. I mean, it's not his.
Yes, son. It's a confusing story that people have a lot of rightful suspicions about because there's no real explanation for what's happened. It's just like a Cuban teenager that he's decided to like steal somehow.
I think he was dating her mother or the kid's mother or something.
Yeah, it's a guy, right? He was dating the mother, right. And then he adopted him like as a teenager.
Yeah, and Matt Gaetz is like our age. Officially adopted him though. Yeah, he's 38.
I can't tell. Yeah, he's 38. The son is like 20 or something, 19. Yeah. And the whole situation is suspect.
It's
at its very best, suspect. It just is a weird situation.
Right.
Matt Gaetz would be in.
Yeah, right. It is. All of the situations that Matt Gaetz is in are situations that you would, if you were writing, you know, comedy about this. If you were writing the Veep episode that involved Matt Gaetz,
wouldn't be hard
this is where you'd end up.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, his BFF, a twice impeached private citizen living in Florida, is continuing his duties as the activities director at Mar-a-Lago. And do you know that the reason he's allowed to live there is because he is claiming to be an employee of Mar-a-Lago? And he is basically the activities director. The claim that they made that allowed them to skirt the law that he wasn't allowed to live there is basically that he's going to be the activities director at Mar-a-Lago. He's doing it. And that's really that's the level of job that he is suited to as well. So it's an appropriate position, I think, for him.
Yeah. I agree.
In any case, they had an RNC donor retreat in Palm Beach this weekend. Most of it was at the Four Seasons because even they're not tacky enough to go to Mar-a-Lago for a retreat. But they did have a dinner at Mar-a-Lago so they could kiss the ring, I guess. So Trump got a chance to give a speech in which he continued in on his line of attack against Mitch McConnell, who he is not happy with, called him a dumb son of a bitch for not defending him enough at the impeachment trial. He said he was disappointed in Mike Pence, and Mike Pence notably was not present. There were a lot of 2024 hopefuls present in, you know, or 2022 hopefuls and for various offices present to kiss the ring at this event, and Mike Pence was like notably absent. He's also like really mad at Fauci.
Oh yeah, sure.
I don't know why be mad at, why pick the person that everyone in America loves the most and be mad at him. Right. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
But Trump, and he also, you know, had some harsh words for Elaine Chao as well, because she was one of the only cabinet officials that actually resigned after January 6th.
Oh, right. Well, that's,
and she's married to Mitch McConnell.
Mitch McConnell's wife. Right.
Yeah. But in any case, he has started to rev up his small dollar fundraising apparatus, and he started issuing endorsements for 2022, and is mostly doing it, I'm pretty sure, just to make a point of not endorsing people that voted for his impeachment.
Totally.
Like, he's decided not to endorse Lisa Murkowski, which is like, go ahead and try not to endorse Lisa Murkowski. In, she won a write-in candidacy. Like, they've tried to oust her before. Like, she don't, Donald Trump is not going to defeat Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. No. And then, so in any case, and also McConnell's going to have to back Murkowski because he's not as big a fool as Donald Trump. So I feel
so
like
true.
it's not really an issue, but he's mostly just issuing endorsements to not endorse some people, basically. So that's his new plan, is to pout at Mar-a-Lago, deliver speeches of his greatest hits anytime an event rolls through town, and then to issue endorsements with the intention of specifically not endorsing his enemies.
I mean, listen, if Donald Trump can weigh into some primaries that might, you know, result in some, you know, Todd Akins of the world in districts that might potentially be winnable by Democrats in those instances, then I think that he should, you know, go for it. I don't want him to do that in districts that are specifically Republican, because I already feel like we have enough
Trump/QAnon
people who have gone to Congress.
Right.
So, you know, I feel like I should watch what
Q
I say about him endorsing
too,
people. But
so
like,
I have a lot of opinions about the QAnon faction in Congress now that I've watched the Q doc.
Oh my God, I know. You've finished. I haven't even started it yet.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy, and also it's exactly what you think it is while also being the craziest thing you've ever seen. I can't, but my larger point in bringing it up now is more that if you are a person who believes in QAnon, then you are also like a person who like believes in fairy tales. Like, you're not like a thinking person. I mean, we know that, but like, I'm now like confused about what adult people are doing in Congress as QAnon people. I'm also confused about what Marco Rubio was doing there. And like Kristi Noem, sure, she's nuts. Of course she was there.
She's nuts. She's also like very much raising her profile these days. Like,
yes,
she's
exactly.
a person
these
who
are
probably
all
thinks
wannabes.
That she's running for president. Also, right. Yeah.
Exactly.
And Marco Rubio wants to be president. He already tried once. So.
Of course. And he is never going to defeat dry mouth. So it probably isn't going to happen. But also like Ron DeSantis. Well, yeah, they were in Florida. And of course, Ron DeSantis was there because he's a lunatic. And he also is mad at Fauci for reasons that a person can't know. But I, for some reason, because Marco Rubio is really the only person that got called out in the coverage that is like, I would say, listen, I'm not going to call any of these people reputable politicians, but I am going to call some of them real politicians versus like patently fake people. Like Kristi Noem is like not a real person. Like that's, she's not a real politician. She's not even an evil thinking person. She's just out in, she's like a Palin-esque like sort of outlier person. And that's, you know, I think a lot of the people that were, Ron DeSantis is a Palin-esque outlier person. He's like not a real person. Marco Rubio, I think of as like a fairly real politician who's just like an asshole. And so I dislike, and also like Trump was an asshole to him. So like, it's not only embarrassing for America that he's there, but it's embarrassing for him personally that
him
he's there.
Him specifically, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, little Marco. So, you know, I don't know. I have some questions about the methods that some of these really opportunistic assholes are going to pursue in 2024, thinking that they have to appeal to the Trump base, which I would contend they should not try to do.
Yeah.
But
I agree.
None of this is to say that Mitch McConnell deserves to be off the hook with anyone.
No, he doesn't at all. He said some hilarious things this week. And one thing, like, accidentally that I agree with, not in the way that he said it, but it harkens back to sort of a thing that you and I feel like have talked about over the years on where maybe there might be some alignment of things, at least. I didn't think it was with Republican politicians, but certainly with at least Republican voters. But anyway, he was out this week because, you know, we talked last week how Major League Baseball had moved the All-Star Game out of Atlanta due to the voter suppression law that just passed there in Georgia. And so there's been some other companies that have really also been pushing back against this, Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines. And also there's some similar showdowns happening elsewhere. American Airlines just recently criticized this bill in Texas that would prohibit extended voting hours and outlaw drive-through voting across the state and some other changes. You know, all of these Republican states are getting up to these voter suppression laws. So Mitch McConnell had a press conference and he was asked about this specifically. And he said, "My warning to corporate America is to stay out of politics," but then added, "I'm not talking about political contributions."
Oh my god!
And there's the gig right there, you guys. I mean,
he just gave up the whole game. What? How is anyone able to support a party that's willing to openly admit this?
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who has always wanted. Right, and this is a guy who has always wanted more corporate money in politics. Yeah. I mean, like, his entire career has been, you know, I think he sort of, like, has famously said, like, the three things you need to get ahead in politics are money, money, money. I mean, he was sort of, like, the Republican who, like, fought John McCain the hardest over, you know, some of these campaign finance reform bills. I mean, like, this is a guy who is obsessed with having money in politics. So, like, I'm not surprised he added the, "I'm not talking about political contributions."
But I'm the surprised idea he said the that first would, thing.
I know, but the idea that he would suggest that they just stay out of it, but then also still keep giving them money is kind of hilarious. But then there was something that he said it in an insane way, but like, this is weird because he said, from election law to environmentalism to radical social agendas to the Second Amendment, parts of the private sector keep dabbling in behaving like a woke parallel government. Now, on all of those issues.
How does he think it got this way?
Exactly. And that's what I'm like, can we like agree on this and like also explain to him like why the left sort of like wishes that corporations would also stay out of government? Like, I just feel like this is what
they are literally behaving like.
This is what the far left has
government.
Been crowing about for decades, right? I mean,
this is so confusing.
It's wild.
I just, like, I don't know, because he stands patently against this thing that he just said in every meaningful way. I don't know, like, is he just trying to shame them out of talking about voting laws and environmental regulations and, like, truly cannot see that he is actually the one empowering them to do this? Because it'd be one thing, like, look. He's talking out of both sides of his mouth. He's being an asshole. He's being a hypocrite. Whatever. That's Mitch McConnell. But if you are someone who is concerned that private corporations feel that they can weigh in on political issues in direct ways, then you also have to know if you are the person who has enabled them to do that. You can't just be mad that they did it. It is because of policy he supported that they are even in a position to do this in the first place. I would also prefer that it not be Delta that's bailing us out from, you know, voter suppression laws.
Right.
I would prefer that there not be companies involved in this conversation. I would prefer only voters be involved. But
I agree.
We live in his world.
We do. And I also, I think it's this has sort of like caused me to want to point out something else important that I feel like maybe we didn't when we were talking last week in regards to Major League Baseball moving the All-Star game. You know, a lot of these companies do some of this, you know, wokeness, if we're following, you know, McConnell's verbiage here, for the very reason that they will then sort of like use that wokeness to have permission from America to give all of their money to Republicans. And the reason that they're giving, or most, I mean, Democrats are taking some of it too. Let's be honest with ourselves.
They're giving money to corrupt politicians.
But the reason that they are giving it to Republican politicians is because they don't want their taxes raised, right?
That's right.
So, like, it is easy for them to go out and be like, oh, we are against this law in Georgia, but then also funnel millions of dollars to fucking Mitch McConnell, right?
Which is exactly what they're all doing.
That's which is literally exactly what they are all doing. Same with environmentalism, right? They're acting like they're going to put some money into like making sure that like whatever, you know, town they're based in like has some sort of recycling plant or whatever. But meanwhile, like, you know, spewing all of the world's, you know, carbon into the air, but then like not wanting there to be giving to Republicans because Republicans are going to fight the Green New Deal, right? Like this.
It's literally it's an endless the philanthropy cycle. Model. It's the same as philanthropy.
Exactly what, yes.
It's, you know, we've talked a lot about how crap the philanthropy just sort of like system is
model
in
is
America
correct.
And just as an idea, because obviously you shouldn't be able to buy goodwill so that you can continue to maintain your own power as a powerful right. company or entity. This is exactly what being hashtag woke does for these companies as well. And it's cheaper than real philanthropy because they can just issue a bunch of stupid statements about how they don't believe in voter suppression, continue to give all the money to Republicans so that their taxes stay low, continue to create the Jeff Bezoses of the world and continue
America
to not support.
America applauds them for moving moving the stupid All-Star game, which again, didn't cost them any money.
Right. It had nothing to do with anything. And it is just like philanthropy where it only serves to entrench their power further, which is why it's funny to have Mitch McConnell, who is the king of entrenching their power further, being the one who's trying to call it out over one inconvenient world, you know, situation in which they're making his party look bad because they've stepped so far over the line that Coca-Cola decided that it was literally worth it as a company that sells a product that appeals to everyone, every cross-section of society. That it would be worth it to take a stand on a political issue because it's so egregiously ridiculous that they actually can get away with it. I mean, that's when you know. If you are worried that large corporations that serve vast cross-sections of society are coming out against policy that you favor, then you really need to think about how broad the hashtag against movement is for that policy.
Well, that's what,
because it's everyone.
They've run the numbers on this.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, Delta didn't think to themselves, we're going to come out against this because it's the right thing to do. They figured that that would give them the goodwill, give them a kind of goodwill that would improve business.
Yeah.
It's just philanthropy. And philanthropy is bullshit. So we did it again.
Get into it, guys.
Get into it. And also, I love when he mentions the Second Amendment in that comment. He's obviously talking about anti-gun, you know,
gun
about companies coming in, out in favor of gun control, which is so hilarious because it is literally that he and his friends have been bought off by an organization that is designed specifically to, you know, promote by the industry that organization, you know, promotes, by the sort of racist policy goals of that organization itself. Like it's so funny to mention the Second Amendment in that.
I know.
We have pointed out again and again and again that the reason we don't have movement on gun control is literally about corporate money. It's about super PACs and corporate money because it is not about public will. There is public will to do everything.
It's not that there's
everything.
Not widespread agreement on this.
Yeah. So it's hilarious that he would bring that up. In any case, some updates from New York State. Things are getting only wilder as Andrew Cuomo's approval ratings sink further. Now, I learned some context this week to why all of a sudden, like there were a few factors in play that were allowing progressives to get some legislation passed that had been stalled for years in New York State. One is that they defeated the IDC and then not only, you know, they pressured him into disbanding it, but then not only did they get him to disband it, they then defeated 6 of the 8 IDC members. So, you know, you have some socialists in there who weren't there and they were in IDC seats. Have the pandemic, which has just made everything very tenuous for every politician in every state, including in California. And that has also been Cuomo's undoing. You have the fact that Cuomo himself is just like a complete asshole who everyone hates. But then the piece that I didn't think about was that his top enforcer, who's this guy, Joe Prococo, who used to be the guy who would call and scream at whoever Cuomo was mad at. So if you crossed Cuomo, you know, he famously, you know, sends out his enforcers on you. Yeah. This is the guy who would call and scream at you. He went to prison in 2018 for soliciting bribes. So Cuomo is currently at the height. He's at his most vulnerable without his top enforcer.
I had read his name, but hadn't heard it aloud yet.
I know. I know.
I giggled when you said it.
It's too silly. I don't know. They sound like cartoon mobsters. I don't even know Prococo. What. Yeah.
Well, it's fun to say, too.
Joe Prococo. Yeah, no, it's super fun to say. In any case, Cuomo is without his top enforcer, and I had not really... I remember when that guy got sent to jail, but I don't... I sort of hadn't thought about the consequences of it. And so I had kind of forgotten about it, because it was in 2018, and like that was like, what, 20 years ago? I mean, that was a lifetime ago.
Essentially, yeah.
And so I was thinking to myself, as this is all going on, you know, one thing that's really weird about all of these stories coming out against Cuomo is he's been the governor here for a decade. So, you know, it's not like people didn't, A, know that he was disliked, know that there were these stories waiting in the wings. Like, we're years past Me Too, so it's not like it's a trendy moment right now to, you know, relive Me Too stories. Like, I kept being like, I don't understand why he's so vulnerable right now, other than maybe the pandemic has kind of created a vulnerability around every politician. Sure. But then when I read this week, I was like, oh, it's like all these factors coincided, because not only was he unable to protect his conservative agenda by, you know, blocking Democratic legislators from doing anything because all these progressives got elected. So that didn't help. And obviously it has been a years long movement effort to get some of these policies put forward.
Right.
But also the guy that the sort of team he was using to shield himself has dissipated.
Yeah.
So the legislature passed a budget for 2022, for the fiscal year, that Cuomo has said he will sign, that has a millionaire's tax in it. I mean, just a few months ago, I heard him saying we would never have that. Just a few months ago, they started talking, you know, all Julia Salazar and all those people started talking about how we need a millionaire's tax, and you heard the governor's office be like, that'll never happen. It's ridiculous. And here we are. We are going to be the state, and I'm proud of this, even though I technically live in California, but my home state of New York is going to be the state that has the highest tax rate for millionaires of any state in the union.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't be prouder of us. I couldn't be prouder. So New Yorkers earning between $1 and $5 million a year are going to see their tax rate go from 8.82 to 9.65, almost a full percent. If you earn between $5 and $25 million, it is going to be 10.3%. If you earn above $25 million, 10.9%. The corporate tax rate went up from 6.5 to 7.25% for companies that earn more than $5 million a year. I mean, we're in there, you guys. And this is going to raise $4.5 billion.
Yeah, that's what I think, you know, it's hard to, I think, imagine when you sort of like think about like those are like small ticks up, right? Like how much money you're going to be able to raise here. I mean, I think that was sort of like part of it. Like these numbers are so big for people, I think that it like gets a little funky, and also people don't know how taxes work. I mean, this was a problem, I think, like to some degree, Elizabeth Warren was having when she was talking about, you know, like her 2-cent tax was going to be able to pay for like every single social program, you know, known to man. But it really... It really does. I mean, it adds up, obviously, because there's too many people who are making this much money. But like in the scope of like how much each individual people are going to have their taxes raised, I mean, I think, you know, it's only so like if we're going between, you know, who's making over 1 million, 1 million to 1.5 million, it's going up 1%, and it's only going up 1% on that money between like 1 million and 5 million, right? The same with 5 million to 25, it's only going up from, you know, the 9.6 that it was at between to 10.3. So like,
right. So you already have your million.
Right. You already have we're not bankrupting these people, right?
By like... Well, and the other argument that people always use is that millionaires will leave if you do this. And research, I just want to point out before any, I don't know what listeners are getting in my face about this, but before any listeners get in my face about this, research has shown repeatedly that millionaires don't actually leave when you raise their taxes. And why? Because where are they going to go? This is New York City.
That's what I was just about to say. Like,
this is
most of these, I was going to say, most of these millionaires, I mean, not all of them, obviously, but like most of them are living in New York City. Like, and they're living in New York City because for very specific reasons, right?
Like,
because
it's New York City.
Like, they're working on Wall Street. They're like in development. They're not just going to like go elsewhere. That's the same with California, no? I mean, like if we were to do this, like these are all the rich people here would be actors and actresses and tech people, right? Like, what are they going to go do that elsewhere? I mean, like, I suppose down the road you could, but at least right now it's like it's not going to cause people to leave because you literally you have to be here.
So, no, it's just it has been studied. Economists have looked at this and they have found that the number of millionaires that leave because of these kinds of tax increases is incredibly small, and it is not worth the amount of extra money you get from the tax increases to not have them.
Yeah.
You know, that's I also think people have the sense that, like, millionaires are offering great contributions to society all over the place. Society's not losing out because millionaires are leaving. The tax base, the only thing that matters is the numbers. The tax base is what you worry about. And the tax base doesn't actually decrease when you raise taxes on very wealthy people. It stays the same or grows, you know? So, fuck them. Also, Cuomo has been staunchly against tax increases for the entire time he's been in office. It was one of the reasons that he sounded like a straight Republican in the gubernatorial debates when he was first running. And he doesn't currently have the leverage to not sign this, because he would like to not sign this.
right.
But he, and this is part of a huge budget, by the way. The budget they passed is $212 billion. Just for some context, the last couple years, including the year before the pandemic, it was more like $175 billion. So this budget has a lot more good stuff, too. So we're raising taxes on millionaires. Go us. They extended the eviction moratorium for another year, and they created a $2.4 billion fund so that low and middle income tenants can pay off as much as a year's worth of back rent if they owe it. For the first time in a decade, they're going to fully fund the public schools. There was this court ruling in 2006 that basically stated that New York State was, like, not providing the constitutionally required amount of support for their public schools. And there's been longstanding issues here as well with unequal distributions of that money. So the state was actually giving more money to upstate students per capita than downstate students for a long time. And so there have been a lot of issues with the way that they fund public schooling in the state. And, you know, I mean, New York State has, as state public school systems go, a fairly decent public school system, but they have been just bleeding it dry for years. So this is the first budget in a decade where they're going to fully fund the public schools. And then also that increased funding that the court mandated that they pay in 2006, they increased the budget for that as well. So they're going to put $1.4 billion into that, which makes up for a lot of the years of underpayment. So that's great. They created an excluded workers fund so that undocumented people who had been ineligible for benefits during the crisis, like unemployment, are going to become eligible for $15,000 in unemployment benefits, which is a huge relief. If you think about, like, it's easy to decide to yourself, if you are a person who doesn't want to think about things more holistically, that, you know, you're not going to provide benefits to undocumented people because they broke the law or whatever vague thing people are always saying. But undocumented people, like, live here and are a part of the economy. So, like, all of our lives improve when people aren't living in desperate situations in a place like New York, especially. That it's really important.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, so many of I'm assuming that so many of the undocumented people who are living in New York are probably working in the types of jobs who probably took a hard hit, right? They were
totally
in the restaurant. They're working in the service industry. They're working in the restaurants. They were working in hotels. They were working in, all of those, probably a lot of, you know, just tourism type.
Domestic work, which is another thing that took a hit.
Yeah. So they obviously, and they're here, whether you think that they should be here or not. Does
they
not
are like
deny the
human
fact that
beings
they
who need food
are
and shelter here.
Right. Yeah.
So, like, if they don't have that, that actually just ends up being your problem in the end. So it doesn't make sense to not provide that kind of support. So that's really exciting. In any case, I'm telling you guys, like, five more women, single payer healthcare will be here. We've got to keep working at it. Somewhere
or not.
In New York
maybe
State.
Maybe you don't even need any more.
Maybe he's already weak enough that we can just do it. Maybe we're there. The assembly is there. I got to figure out if the state Senate is there. I mean, I don't know if he has, like, what's he going to do if they both pass the New York Health Act?
Like, yeah, I was going to say, is he just, like, going to start vetoing a bunch of things, like, while he's in the situation that he's in? It doesn't seem like
he
it.
He can't.
Right?
That's what, obviously, he would have done the millionaire's tax first if he was powerful enough to be vetoing stuff. I am currently in the awkward position of no longer advocating for his resignation, but only advocating for people to continue advocating for his resignation, because I like where that's landed us. I think that we're in a good place right now where if he could just finish out his term in the weakest possible position.
Yeah.
I mean, our legislature is great right now. You know, New York State has a really progressive legislature. So, like, let's get in there. Got to do it.
I like it.
In any case.
Other news. You know, we talk about our, disdain for James Clyburn a lot on this podcast, and that has not necessarily changed.
Right. Although, we continue one to thing have the
that
same
we
government.
Have been one thing that we have been begging people to do, especially as they talk about sort of like voting rights and then also whether they're going to get rid of the Jim Crow filibuster, is that we should be asking people, like, you know, what about voting rights you want to compromise on with Republicans if you're not going to get rid of the filibuster to be able to pass some of these, you know, voting rights right. laws that have come out of the House. Well, James Clyburn listened to us.
That's right. He so rarely does.
Went after and Joe Manchin this week
he finally
on that very question.
Yeah. Well, Joe Manchin is driving everyone bananas because
yes.
he is continuing to insist via logic that could not be more confusing or weird that the January 6th attacks have somehow made him more eager for bipartisanship.
Right.
And because of that, he can't support changing the filibuster.
Right.
Clyburn correctly noted that that's complete bullshit. So
yeah.
Manchin had said, January 6th changed me. I never thought in my life, I never read in history books to where our form of government had been attacked at our seat of government, which is Washington, D.C., at our capital, by our own people. So something told me, wait a minute, pause, hit the pause button. Something's wrong. You can't have this many people split to where they want to go to war with each other. Which, if his conclusion from that sentiment hadn't been that we couldn't then end the filibuster because bipartisanship is important,
right.
I might have been in for it.
No, but he wants Clyburn, to have like a kumbaya moment with a bunch of Republicans.
Right. So Clyburn went on CNN this week on Friday and said, he said that January 6th changed him. Well, it changed me as well. I want to remind him of what some of those insurrectionists were saying to those African-American law officers who were out there. One man talking about how many times he was called the N-word. I want to know, how does that man compromise in such a situation? How would he have me compromise in such a situation? And that is the question. What is the compromise between somebody breaking into the Capitol and using the N-word and reality?
Yep. Also, what does Joe Manchin think a bipartisan voting rights bill looks like?
Oh, my God. I know. Because he's not in favor of the For the People Act, which is, by the way, not even the height of what we could be doing to protect voting rights. Is it important? Sure. Is it the height of the greatest voting rights proposal that has ever been made? No.
No,
I would
not
contend that we could compromise more with the left on the For the People Act if we were compromising. But I just, like, I don't understand how Manchin's position on that could be that he doesn't support it because we need to find a bipartisan compromise for letting people vote in a democracy.
I know.
What's in the middle of letting people vote and
right.
blocking the vote? Half blocking
also,
the vote?
At what point does Joe Manchin, who did finally end up voting for, you know, the COVID bill, ultimately, even though he was able to, you know, kill the only piece of actual structural change,
right.
being a $15 minimum wage. You know, what is happening in his brain? Are there nine Republicans who are telling him that they will work with him on some sort of compromise on the For the People Act when their own party is the one who's got 300 some bills in 40 state legislatures to try and make sure that people can't vote? What is he hearing
from people? I feel like one of the issues with the Senate, and specifically people who've been in the Senate since time immemorium, is that they are so sort of like beholden to this idea of the Senate being this place of like staid, you know, reasoning that they mm-hmm. can't, they're not actually hearing anything right now, and they are interpreting that nothing to be that there isn't enough bipartisanship, because that is what they hear. That's the sound of silence in the Senate to them. Like,
yeah.
I think that the bigger obstacle here is actually Kristen Sinema, because I think there are Republicans trying to tell her that they'll work with her on bullshit, because she is always sneaking off to talk to Mitch McConnell. Joe Manchin is not out there talking to Republicans because they don't like him either. So Joe Manchin is a man without friends, is what he is. And he is a man who remembers a time that the Senate operated slightly differently than it operates now. And they saw themselves as a great bipartisan force. And he is only able to hearken back to that time because no one has spoken to him recently.
Yep.
Kristen Sinema, I think, is somebody who is sneaking off with, you know what she reminds me of? You know when you're like in middle school and you're like at some sort of middle school event, and there are those girls that like sneak off to like whisper in some place, and you're like, why wasn't I invited to whisper with them? Are they talking about me, or are they talking about something else? And it's like a very middle school girl thing to do, to like sneak off into the corner and be whispering with each other, and then point, like looking at people, but not really, you know, like giggling in the corner. I feel like Kristen Sinema is the like kind of adult who like sneaks off and like enjoys sneaking off into the corner to have like a private chat with someone, just to be the most in the know, just to be the most popular person in the room. Yeah, I feel like that's what's going on with her. Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about, she's somebody who likes to be noticed. She is somebody who likes to think that she is, she's like mean girling her way around the Senate right now, you know? And I feel like what's more mean girl than sneaking off into a closet with Mitch McConnell so that she can whisper about everyone. But one thing I know for sure is that no one is sneaking off into a closet with Joe Manchin, because nobody cares about what he thinks.
Yeah.
He's just out there having crazy thoughts.
Right. I agree. I just want one of the two of them to
get their head together,
you know, to show it to me. Right. Yeah. This is the problem that we sort of like talked about with the, you know, the problem solvers caucus. Right. Like, OK, well, solve a problem.
Right.
Which specific problem since you started this caucus have you solved, right? And like Joe Manchin is like, okay, well, he wants to have some sort of like bipartisan bill on the For the People Act. All right, show me what that fucking looks like.
Start a gang of eight. People, there's no gang of eight currently in the Senate. No. You start your own gang.
Yeah.
You can go any number between 1 and 14 is available. For some reason, they top out at 14. I've never seen a gang of more than 14.
No,
that's never, yeah. There's no, I once looked into all the gangs and there were multiple gangs of 6 and 8. There were not a lot of gangs of 7 because that's awkward because they can't really be equally bipartisan. There were a few gangs of 4 and gangs of 10 and whatever. It doesn't get bigger than 14 though. You can't have more than 14 people in your gang. So find between 2 and 14 people to be in a gang with you so that you can talk about what this great bipartisan bill is going to look like. Because every time they've come up with a bipartisan solution to one of these things, it's been like something that no one else could vote on at all. It's been like a bill that like no one on either side of the aisle could touch.
Oh, right.
It's like
right,
the $11 an hour minimum wage. No one fucking wants that. The left would be murdered for voting for an $11 an hour minimum wage. Right. The right would be murdered even though their own states
don't
have
it at all.
Exactly. So like there's no compromise between doing nothing and $15 an hour. If you don't believe in the philosophy of raising it, then you're not going to vote for a different number.
Right.
So, in any case, he can't start a gang of any number because he doesn't have any friends.
No. So nobody wants to be in the Joe Manchin gang.
No. And that's fair because he seems like he wouldn't be a very good friend.
Awful. Yeah. Ditto Caitlyn Jenner, by the way.
The worst friend.
Oh, my God. Nobody wants to be in her gang.
First of all, Brent pointed out to me while I was just ranting in general about this that there are articles being written about the Caitlyn Jenner potentially running for governor story in which she is being referred to as a trans rights activist.
This very article that we pulled from, which is fucking from Politico. So I would ask that they do better, although they are not always doing as well.
I was
going to
say, they are not being asked. They're not asking anyway whether you think they should do better.
Trans rights activist? I mean, really? I mean, no person has been more disconnected from trans issues than Caitlyn Jenner. And I say that as a person who knows that Caitlyn Jenner is herself transgender.
That's right.
I mean, completely disconnected. And if you have questions about how disconnected she is from that, then you can watch the reality show that she made herself about her transition. I think it was called Becoming Caitlyn or something like that. I can't even remember specifically what it was. But it was a bunch of actual trans activists taking her around to meet actual trans people and her having no fucking clue what was going on in their life, having no clue as to why some of them might have resorted to sex work, because like as a trans person, it is hard to get hired at like an actual job because nobody wants to hire trans
people. Which is not a concern if you're just independently
bullshit,
wealthy.
Right? I mean, so like she is actively not understanding trans issues as a trans person. So I need that to end. I mean, I don't like her for a whole handful of reasons, but like I would allow her to be called a trans activist if like she was doing some trans activism.
it also allows, it's like meant to suggest that she has some sort of vague political awareness that people should give respect for on the left. And like, truly fuck her on every ground, on every political level.
Right. And she also tried to convince us, by the way.
She's a Republican, a lifelong Republican.
Right. And she tried to convince us specifically that Donald Trump was going to be great on trans issues. Do you remember this?
That's right. I sure do. She is somebody who, she is a rich person who has been in favor of, you know, of exploitive economic policy. Mm-hmm. She is a trans person who told us that Donald Trump would be good on trans issues.
Very pro-gun.
She is incredibly pro-gun.
Outspoken on guns.
That's right.
Being pro-gun.
Like, look, it's nice to see that trans people can do anything, including being awful human beings. But right. It's also not something that we need to embrace as a statewide electoral change. We don't need to we don't need to offer even a small amount of support for Caitlyn Jenner to be the governor, because Caitlyn Jenner has not earned the right to represent us.
No.
Based on her being an awful human being.
I think there is a difference between Caitlyn Jenner and, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are sort of like out there being scared because Arnold Schwarzenegger was our governor for a little while. But there were also a lot of, you know, I mean, first off, that recall was like crazy. But I mean, like, you know, porn stars ran, Gary Coleman ran, Larry Flint ran. So there were a lot of, you know,
that was a crazy.
There were a lot of, you know, famous people who did not become the governor of California yet. So we can make a famous person who does not become the governor of California.
Who's her constituency?
We don't need to get amped about this.
I think the only reason that the two of us got amped this week is because she hired like real Republican hacks.
Yeah, because I think last week, for weeks, we have not really been talking about this. I mean, maybe we mentioned it at some point. And I think it was just because
a whole host of loony people to be running for governor.
Of course.
You know.
But then there was this article about how she, you know, hired freaking Brad Parscale, who ran Donald Trump's campaign. I mean, he's since gone crazy.
since.
I mean, maybe was crazy at the time, but he's gone crazier since.
Yeah.
But like, you know, she has assembled this team of like actual people. Ryan Irwin, who was a top official at the California Republican Party, who worked on the Romney and Jeb Bush campaigns.
Harmeet
Dillon, who's a Republican National Committee woman and attorney, pretty high-powered attorney, is going to be the general counsel. So like, there's
a real Republican fundraiser.
So it's getting real, and so that is why I think it was time to talk about it, and also time to maybe get a little amped about it. But like, just remember that Caitlyn Jenner does not have to become the governor.
That's right. Anyone else in the entire state could be the governor. State of 40 million people.
Including Gavin Newsom could continue to be governor.
Right.
I mean,
and one thing that would be an enormous step down from even Gavin Newsom, who I know everyone's mad at, and I get it, because fuck him, is Caitlyn Jenner.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I think that people get, you know, the recalls on some level, like, can be confusing. But, like, you know, just because, you know, I got a poll about this sent to me, and it was, you know, like, there were a bunch of questions about, like, whether you like Gavin Newsom, this or that or the other. And it's like, I said, no, I don't. Do I approve of Gavin Newsom? I said, no. I didn't even really know why at the time. I mean, I'm sure if I gave it more than like 7 seconds of thought, I probably could have come up with 100 reasons. But then the next question is, do you want him to be recalled? And then I also said no, right? Like, because maybe he would not be my first choice for governor, but he's the current governor and the other choices are terrible.
That's right. I stand on recalls where I stand on the prop system in general too, which is just like, it's a pretty anti-democratic move to have such a low bar for a recall.
And it's also, that's what I was going to say. It's too easy to do here. And I understand why changing those laws might be hard, because I think it sort of feels self-serving to do so. Right. So I get why maybe that hasn't been changed, but I think all you have to do is have like 12% of like the people who voted in the last election, and we're in off years here, so it's probably not like a huge turnout anyway, and like obviously well more than 12% of people voted against Gavin Newsom. So if you are have enough of a sort of like moneyed response to being able to
if
like
you
actually
can
put these
if you have the money
together,
to petition,
it's really not so hard. And it should be harder. I agree that you should be able to do it.
Of course.
But it shouldn't just be as much as just sort of like hanging out at some, you know, rallies and then like having people sign something and like that being enough to get you there.
A reason this isn't happening frequently in other states.
Elsewhere. Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And agreed. While a lot of them have shitty governors, they...
right.
Many of them are worse than Gavin Newsom. There's no reason for him to be the one who's getting recalled.
Agreed.
In final news, John Boehner, a man who frequently tears up at the impossible, inspiring brilliance of his own life story, is out there promoting a new memoir.
Right. Worked in his family's bar.
That's right. Sweeping the floors.
Been drinking since childhood, I think.
Clearly. Tears up at the thought of the impressive rise to prominence that he's endured.
Yes.
Out there peddling his new memoir, On the House, a Washington memoir.
Mm.
Hilarious. More bar references, so I'm sure that these interviews also will include a frequent foray into his own tears. But in any case, he went on CBS this morning, today, Sunday, and just sort of seemed to go there to, like, talk some shit about people, which was sort of amazing. He's kind of
so
catty
good.
In a way that's sort of fun.
He really hates... I'm here for it.
Right? He really hates Jim Jordan and Ted Cruz. He called them both political terrorists. Of Jim Jordan especially, he said, I never saw a guy who spent more time tearing things apart, never building everything, never putting anything together. He called Cruz a jerk in the same interview. And in the book, he calls him a reckless asshole.
Right. And also, hilariously, there was that audio leak of him.
Oh, my God.
Because there were, like, I guess the people who had worked on the audio recording of this, like, had claimed over time that, like, he would often just sort of, like, drink and smoke, like, I think smoking was involved. I don't remember. Certainly drinking. And you
drinking
can tell that he had
involved.
Been drinking because, like, I'm curious to listen to that audiobook because I'm wondering how much of it you can actually understand, because in this particular clip, it was some very slurred words. I mean,
But he goes off on, like, a long rant about Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Well, and there was also the one where he, like, is actually, like, reading something from his book. And then at the end, he was like, and fuck Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Right.
So John Boehner doesn't have time for these petty assholes. Hilariously, he is pretty hard on Trump in the book, but chickened out of calling him on his shit on CBS. So... he still, I guess, has some self... Trump will never read the book, so he never has to worry about Trump finding out if he doesn't say
but
it
like,
on CBS.
I feel like if you're trying to promote a book, then, like, start some shit with Trump.
Start some shit with Trump, right? Yeah, because Trump will definitely amplify it. I mean, not busy. So, I mean, he has all the time in the world to say petty shit about John Boehner.
And if you go hard on Trump, you also can probably get some airtime on, you know... MSNBC would probably love to have John Boehner on and talk about...
Oh,
how
for sure.
terrible Donald Trump is, right? I mean, he could reach a whole separate audience if he really went, you know, whole hog on his hatred of Trump.
No, I think that's a fumble. But in any case, sort of excited for more leaks from John Boehner's literary career. The book comes out on Tuesday. Don't buy it, but just, like, be on your toes. You know? Just be on your toes.
No. That's... Yeah.
And that's the news this week, because we're finally out of the Trump era and the news is slow now.
It was tough.
I mean,
guys,
it's what a delight. I think if there are any two podcasters more up to the challenge of this out there, I would be shocked, because we have made it through years of dry spells. Not even, you know, a lot of podcasts started in the Trump era and they were like, what are we going to do if Trump leaves office? And then a lot of them stopped recording. We were
amateur
out
hour.
There. Recording in the midst of truly nothing happening for years and didn't even know it. So,
I know. Yeah.
We'll be here just continuing to carry on.
Yes.
That's the news this week. We will be back next week and hopefully it will be as slow as this week, because that's when you really get down to the business of reporting the real news. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.